Hello and welcome to another episode of Exiting the Cave Short Reads, The Consolation of Philosophy by Boethius. This week, there is no reading or analysis because I have exams. So instead, I've decided to treat you to a musical interlude. Don't worry though, it's still on topic. What you're about to hear is a short interview, first with Dr. Sam Barrett of the University of Cambridge, and then with Benjamin Bagby, musical director of Sequentia, the early music performance group that helped Dr. Barrett realize his project in a performance recorded at Cambridge in 2016. What was that project? To reconstruct and perform musical manuscripts recovered from the 9th through 12th century from various sources that purported to accompany the poems of the Consolation of Philosophy. Here's what Cambridge University has to say about this project. Over the course of the five books of the Consolation of Philosophy, Boethius gradually reconciles himself to his fate through dialogue with a personified figure of Philosophia, who restores him to his rightful mind by means of a talking cure. But it is not all talk. Prose alternates with poetry, most of which is sung in the narrative by the fictional Philosophia, mainly reflecting on the themes of the preceding discussion. Musical notations for lyric portions of The Consolation of Philosophy survive in manuscripts copied from the 9th through the late 11th century CE. Few of these notations can be reconstructed with confidence since their mnemonic form captured melodic outline but relied on now-lost oral tradition to supply information about precise pitches. One notation can be reconstructed fully as it survives in alphabetic notation, the melody for Bella Bis Quinis, the seventh metrum of Book 6. A few others can be reconstructed with a degree of confidence since they are recorded in neumes that convey much information, chiefly through their heightening and significative letters, as well as specific signs used to signify the semitone step within the mode. For the vast majority, pitches cannot be securely recovered, but what can be identified are principles underlying the melodic settings. Research conducted at Cambridge has identified a range of recitational techniques and song modes that lie behind the pneumatic notations. In particular, it has become clear that established ways of reciting poetic and prose texts were employed within a culture whose engagement with Latin song extended from school learning through to liturgical ceremony. There is also evidence that medieval musicians associated certain lyric meters used in the Consolation of Philosophy with similar poetic structures used in contemporaneous songs, seeking to apply characteristic melodic patterns from these repertories to Boethius's poetry. Scholarly detective work enables much melodic information to be recovered about individual songs, but the final leap into sound requires experimentation. Collaboration over a two-year period with members of Sequentia established working methods for reconstruction, drawing on their expertise with early medieval song repertories derived from decades of reconstruction, oral memorization, and performance. This project led to a first performance focused on the six notated poems in the Cambridge Songs Leaf, and to a recording that expanded to 10 songs associated with 11th century Canterbury. The task remains to reconstruct the remaining notated repertory, as well as potentially improving upon the melodies restored jointly with Sequentia.
When I first came to Cambridge as a graduate student, I'd wanted to work on these songbooks from the 12th century. And my supervisor said, Well, there's this other one you're also interested in from the 9th century. How about you start with that one? So I started on that, and I thought this would just be an introduction to my studies. But as it went on, there was more and more and more in this one manuscript that I could work on, and it kept me going for another 4 or 5 years. And within that manuscript, there were just 3 at that time, Boethian metra, that I started to work on. And I began to think more and more about it. I thought, well, there must be more of these. Where do these come from? What's the tradition? And that's what led to my postdoctoral work on Boethian metra, just the Boethius songs. And over time, I discovered, yes, there were more and more of these things. They were in manuscripts that literary scholars had worked on, but often not noted the fact that there were neumes there. The first stage of this project was to collect the notations that existed in these manuscripts. So I checked catalogues, I went around major European library collections, and I used online resources, which became a great help, in fact, in being able to check through manuscripts individually to see, is there notation there or is there not? And at the end of this study, I found over 30 manuscripts with notations for Boethius songs in them, which was much more than previously been thought. And I also found that they came from a particular time period, so this was 9th to the 11th centuries. But the second stage was then, well, how do you make something out of this? It was a risk studying it, because we had the musical notations in the form of neumes. Now, these record the melodic outline of the song, but they don't give us the precise pitches. So the question was, how much can we know about this as a scholar? I could have simply invented the melodies for myself. I could have said, no, we can't do anything with that. But I thought, no, I'll take this scholarly challenge on. How much can you know about this? How much can be reconstructed? And I discovered over the course of several years that it was possible to do something with them. I discovered what lay behind this notated tradition were song models from the period. So that some of the songs were based on simple patterns of recitation. Some of them seemed to be based on more elaborate song models, from the hymn through even to more elaborate responsories. These are some of the most elaborate chant repertories that we have. And it was a question of looking at the texts and putting myself in the mind of the medieval musician and thinking, how would they have made a song out of this melody? And so piece by piece, I began to realize it was possible to know an awful lot about these melodies, in fact, even if you didn't have the precise pitches. And that was the challenge. Could I analyze them? Yes, I could, to a certain extent, it turned out. And I could do the basic scholarly work of collecting together the notations, aligning them, seeing where the similarities lay, seeing how what kind of manuscripts they were in, to do the historical background. And I could do some analytical work. But then the problem was, well, now I know 70, 80, sometimes 90% of what these things might have sounded like, but I don't know the final set of pitches, in most cases. At that point, I faced several options. I could either give up and just simply say, well, I can't do anything more with it, or I could do something more creative. As it turned out, the best solution was to do the scholarly work, get it published, put it out in a standard way, and then to approach performers who are experienced in dealing with this repertory, because they could bring to it an oral knowledge of how melodies worked that was simply beyond me. I could have spent the next 20 years trying to gain this oral melody, but that wouldn't be time well spent. It was much better to go to the performers and to see what they made of these notations. And at that point, I already had a collaborator in mind, having worked with him on one or two projects before, and that was Ben Bagby of Sequentia.
Loved The Consolation of Philosophy. That was a book that had caught my imagination as a schoolboy. And then to find out that the poems were sung was for me a big challenge, and it really stimulated me to see where I might find out about that. When Sam Barrett's work became available, the published research was like an avalanche of information and an avalanche of inspiration as well, because I had been laboring in this tiny vineyard of reconstruction with a minimum amount of input, and suddenly there was this enormous study done over many, many years that Sam Barrett offered the world, And it opened so many new doors that I didn't know where to turn next. It was in a way too much. It mostly involved making choices, deciding which pieces to perform, deciding which manuscripts to use. And I was not well versed enough in the manuscripts or the notation to do that myself. So it was absolutely essential that we establish also a working relationship over the book, over the research, that would lead the performers into that world where they don't always feel so comfortable.
We put together these melodies and began experimenting. It was like a kind of practical experiment in a scientific sense. Do you try out a hypothesis? Could the melody have gone like this?
Non illum rabies minique ponti, versum funditus exagitantis estum, nec ruptis quotiens vagus caminis torquet fumiticos vesemus ignes, aut cessa soliti ferire turres, ardentis via fulminis movebit.
Having tried it out for a certain while, you might think, no, there are problems with doing it that way. Let's try another way. We spent a couple of years on this back and forth. And after a while, you do begin to find melodies that work, that simply grammatically work, and also melodies that seem to fit the rhetorical nature of the text.
It's obvious that the harp played an important role, not only as a symbolic instrument, symbolizing the tones of music and how they fit together, but also in practical terms as an instrument that played both instrumental music and also accompaniment for song. And I think that was an enormous push in the direction of using harps, as opposed, let's say, to fiddles, which are instruments, bowed stringed instruments, are slightly later on the European scene than the plucked stringed instruments. And I decided really to go in the direction of harps. And the flute, which is another one of the instruments mentioned frequently in the texts. Then came the whole problem of how to integrate them with voices. For instance, the flute plays in a very high register and the male voice generally in a lower register. How do you combine a high register accompaniment with a low register singer that's actually supposed to carry the text, so you have an accompaniment which is effectively sounding above the voice? The other issue is the participation of women's voices versus men's voices. That's a big issue in medieval music generally. And how harps were played and how harps were tuned at that time. So that forced me to make many decisions about tuning systems. Knowing the great veneration for Pythagoras and knowing Boethius' own connection with music and with number and with tuning, it's obvious that these harps played in the 9th, 10th, 11th centuries were carefully tuned and were well-crafted instruments. We're not talking here about some instrument that provided a few chords. We're talking about an instrument that really gave essential intervallic information. The work with harps and with flutes went together with the vocal work in trying to create a synergy that the instrument is not just something pasted on at the last minute, but really is integral to the work from the beginning.
I think there was always a bit of me when I was working with these melodies that was slightly disappointed. I knew this was a great text, an incredibly powerful text, one of the most famous texts there was in the Middle Ages. Everybody who was an intellectual would know this text. And yet sometimes when I was working with the melodies, I have to say, I thought, these are very small beer. They don't seem to have many pitches. Sometimes I think they were quite formulaic, and I was just slightly disappointed. However, when I started working with the performers, I realised two things. One was that actually the minimal material wasn't a problem. It actually allowed performers to expand in a way with the material, to extemporise around it, to bring their knowledge of performance techniques, including polyphonic techniques, including heterophony, all sorts of ornamentation that could be brought to these melodies, that made it into a living tradition, and this was actually part of the performer's side of the equation, to have melodies that enabled them to do certain things. The other thing that working with performers really brought to me was a sense that this was more than just an intellectual puzzle. It had been an intellectual problem for me for 10, 20 years, how to, in a sense, solve the problem of these melodies. But that had meant leaving out some of the more rhetorical and effective aspects of performance. And it was only when working with the performers that I began to realise you're going to respond differently to a text that's speaking about lament, to one that's speaking, that seems to be a hymn, to one that is telling a story about myth. They're going to allow the performers to do certain things, and they want to be expressive in different ways. That had been at the back of my mind, but suddenly to see it before me, I began to realise, yes, and that must mean that they're drawing on different vocabulary, slightly different techniques for different songs. It's really that effective quality, that rhetorical quality that changed my view of the repertory. And in one particular case, I think it's been very transformative. We began working on a fragment, the Cambridge Song fragment. And I'd always considered this interesting because it had an interesting story behind it, how this fragment was rediscovered. But it was working with the performers that made me realise this fragment is in fact special, because it's providing us with a level of complexity and a level of elaboration and a level of response to the text that is qualitatively different from some of the earlier material. And that began to suggest to me that perhaps we're not looking at one tradition here, but a tradition that was transformed by professional virtuosic performers, as we know would have been associated with that fragment. And perhaps when you handed this material to performers in the 11th century, it was rather like handing them to professional virtuosic performers now, that they could transform seemingly simple material into an emotional world.
And with that, I will leave you now with a work from the album. This is called Cum Phoebe Radis, which is Latin for With the Radiant Light of Apollo. I hope you enjoy it.